Warning, do not listen to this podcast if hearing about freedom and liberty is not legal for you in your community. And if so, you should immediately move to a hipper community.
Welcome to the Freedom Fiends Podcast, a weekly web lab where Michael W. Dean and Nima Vedati cover the punk rockinist, hip-hopinist current events, as well as timeless universal truths about life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, because there's no such thing as half-free. The Freedom Fiends Podcast, available from freedomfiends.com. That's freedomfiends.com.
Freedom Fiends is proudly syndicated by Alterati.com and the Liberty Radio Network at LRN.FM.
Welcome to the Freedom Fiends Distance Learning Anarchy Series with Freedom Fiends Michael W. Dean.
Broadcasting from my windowless bunker.
And Nima Vedati.
Go, go, Freedom Fiends!
Freedom Fiends, yo.
It's the Fiends. What'd it do?
Yeah. Today I wish I had a cheaper mic. They're doing like construction next door, like two houses over for the sewer, and there's all these machines out there. It's probably going to pick it up. You know, I wish I had like an SM58.
Do I hear the signal that you're recording right now? That's what I hear, right? Because I don't hear any background noise. Sounds good to me.
Listen quietly. Do you hear it?
No, but I think Mumble has its own like natural compression and noise canceling that it adds. So maybe I hear something different than whatever you're. Although we're recording the straight up Mumble signal too, aren't we?
Yeah. Well, okay. If you don't hear it, maybe we're good then. I mean, I've got my choices are condenser mics that have cardioid, you know, pretty much just in front patterns, but. They're also incredibly sensitive, but I'm using my ribbon mic, which is, you know, better at background noise, but it also records from both sides, and one side's facing the window, so.
Yeah.
Window's closed, but I can hear it, but maybe you can't.
I can't. I remember Ben Stone used to always say, oh, you probably hear a lot of background noise, but I wouldn't hear any or much at all, if anything.
Well, Ben and I had a talk yesterday about never pointing out what's wrong.
And then you go ahead and start off the cast with that.
I know.
Hypocrite.
I know. Well, we have an excuse because we do audio tips. So saying that, you know, an SM58 capsule mic, you know, dynamic mic would be more noise canceling behind it than the ribbon mic, which is it's a bi pattern. It's equal from front and back.
Right.
For some reason.
But we also found that if you flip it backwards, at least the ones you and me have, the RSMs, they actually sound a little bit sweeter. So the sound going into the back actually is a little bit different than the sound going into the front.
It's so weird. Why don't they make that the front?
I don't know. Maybe so power users can sound better than rookies.
So my dad.
It's like a crisscross thing. We wear our mics backwards.
So my dad is coming to visit at the end of the month, so he may get to be a in studio guest on the Freedom Fiends Live at some point. Yep.
That should be interesting. Yeah, I'd be interested to talk to your dad. We've already heard my mom like a million times on the Fiends.
So yep.
It'd be nice to hear what the person who made you has to say.
Well, he can tell us how Sarah Palin's going to save us from the Muslims.
White girls politic, and that's that Sarah Palin.
What's that from?
It's a line in a great song called Mercy by Kanye West. I think Big Sean and Pusha T and maybe one other MC that I'm forgetting.
That's funny.
Yeah.
So I got a little, I don't know if it's news you can use, but I wanted to point out, I think we've been having trouble with people being on the wrong feed. When we're doing our live show, they don't realize there's two feeds, and this keeps happening again and again and again. And I think that's some of the like people calling in, and they have, you know, either, you know, you said maybe they think that we have like a call center to route it and put them on hold. But I think sometimes, and I know sometimes, people are listening to the archived non-live streaming feed, which is the listen now blue link on the button. or button on the podcast on the Freedom Fiends website. Mm-hmm. That is never live. Well, it may be at some point in the future if we add a third cast, you know, like a live week cast, midweek right. cast. But so far, that's just you know, for listening to Freedom Fiends Radio, which is an archive of every episode we've done, every Anarchy Gumbo we've ever done, every interview we've ever done on other podcasts, and a bunch
just
of
played
music.
On a loop,
yeah. right? And a bunch of music. I mean, the loop is like 3 days long, and people listen right. for 3 days. So,
yeah, yeah. So that's completely different. The live show is actually on LRN.fm.
Yeah, and that link you can find by on our website going to the live show page, which is called, let me see what it's called here. We got a page coming up. It's called, there's a link at the top. It says live call-in show. And if you go to that has the LRN link, which we're on in archive in the middle of the night, but every night, but we're only on that live Sunday from 5 to 7 East Coast time.
Right, right. Although yeah. adaptation to our customers' needs is a good virtue to have. I'm wondering, maybe we should. Would it be too much trouble just to put butt on during the live
and broadcast
shows?
Live? I thought about that.
So it'd be dual casting.
I definitely thought about that today, and I think that's doable, but I think I need to work out a little more of the, like, I'm scrambling with so much stuff on my end. Maybe you could do it on your end.
Test the butt? Yeah, I could test the butt. I'm a butt specialist.
I had to, you know, it requires a couple computers, too. You don't know if okay. you have enough computers. And
well, my wife's been doing job interviews all week, so hopefully she'll have a day job soon, and I'll have all this time to myself to... And I can also have her computer, because while she's gone, she'll leave her extra computer. So okay. I can try it out.
Well, if we do that, we will announce that. Yeah.
Yes. But yeah, you're right. I think it was Randy England's call during the last live show, which was a great call. I think we held him over for two segments. Yeah. But when he first called, he was like, yeah, you were talking about, what was it?
DUIs, cops
DUI
holding people down
testing.
For blood testing. And
that's
I was like,
right.
he was like, you were talking about DUI blood testing. And I was like, yeah, about 11 months ago, which, you know, he didn't know. I wasn't calling him dumb. I was just like, you know, I was wondering, like, I've had a lot of off mic conversations with him about law. And I was wondering, like, you know, 2 weeks ago, was I like sleep dialing and talking to him about this and didn't remember? And he was just picking it up from there or something. But no, it was playing at that moment on our archive feed streams.
Right, right, right. So he was listening to an older episode where indeed you were talking about DUI and
we were.
Cops holding you down to pull blood out of your body.
Yep.
Which... I asked him about if it's a Fifth Amendment kind of thing, and he said no, because in the Fifth Amendment it says, you know, you basically you can't testify against yourself.
Well, yeah.
But
I mean,
I still think that you can expand that to mean the spirit of the law, I think, meant self-incriminating in general.
I don't know. It was so weird at that point because I was so, like, in LibHair at the moment talking about, you know, that book, Anatomy of the State by... What's his name? Come on, man. Help me
Murray out. Rothbard.
Murray Rothbard. Yeah. And, you know, I was like, what? You want to talk about reality? No, man. We're in lib pair here.
But Brandy's conversation did end up going there. I mean, when he was talking about the situation where the mother births the baby and then kills
yeah,
it. In the,
yeah.
Or doesn't kill it, but neglects to feed it and it dies.
Which sounded like, you know, the horrors of Lib Pair as described in Crack Magazine in that article we read or something, you know, about how they're in Lib Pair, they're the problem of indigent children would be taken away by keeping them in brothels.
Right, right. And, you know, I brought up shunning. You know, you could just shun the parent and not do business with her. And I think Randy said, well, that kind of could work, but I'm not a believer that that's the only solution you have.
Yeah, I don't think shunning's the only solution. And again, I'm not, like, putting down Randy for calling in with a great question. I was off in fantasy land at the time.
Okay.
Which,
okay.
you know, part of creating Lib Pair is picturing it. Because, you know, you can't invent a cell phone until you can picture a cell phone. You can't invent, you know, wireless transmission of radio or, you know, internal combustion engine without picturing it. You know, you got to picture the fantasy. The science right. fiction becomes science fact.
Right, right. Vision comes before innovation.
Yeah. So we have a bunch of new listeners on the streaming feed in weird places. We got a couple of people in China are listening for like 8 hours at a time. Somebody is listening a lot from Myanmar. You know where that is?
Ah. Myanmar. Yeah, yeah, that's Burma. Southeast Asia. It's yeah, Burma. It used to be called Burma.
Which is one of the most repressive regimes ever, their current politics.
Right, right. In fact, the gentleman, Will Coley, who I interviewed, it's an upcoming Gumbo interview.
Oh, yeah, this Saturday comes out.
He was talking about it a little bit in the repressive regime there. And I didn't know they actually changed – according to him, they changed the name from Burma to Myanmar in part to combat their horrible PR about how repressive Burma was. But now it's been Myanmar for like a decade or more. And so I wonder if they're going to have to change the name again.
That's funny, rebranding. You know, I'm wondering, like, when the Republican the Republican Party are going to change their name to something. They've got something.
Oh, there you go. So right.
Yep. So, bow tie libertarians. I looked at the Von Mises Institute, and they have a wiki. And, you know, I figured there'd be, like, a six-page article about the Freedom Fiends and how great they are with, you know, wonderful quotes about liberty, like, you know, the fabulous quote about liberty that I made, like, I want to have an uncircumcised wolf living in my yard. I mean, that's important stuff, and the kids need to know it. The only mention of us on the Von Mises Institute wiki is in the Silver Dime Card article. We're mentioned in passing as a list of people that there are silver dime cards for. So, I think someone should go on there and add a decent Freedom Fiends and Guns and Weed the Road to Freedom entry.
Okay. Okay.
And it would especially help if it was a student at Von Mises Institute or if it's someone who regularly has already updated the wiki. That usually works best with wikis. But
although we have a completely different feel. I mean, like the Institute is like Libertarian University, and we're like the parties down the street on West Campus. We're the frat party or something.
I know. We're like the, you know, we're standing at the edge of the parking lot when the people come out of class going, psst, hey kid, want to buy some Crokodile and Liberty?
Yeah, Crokodile and Liberty, baby. Or Liberty branded Crokodile.
Yeah, yeah. It'd be like, it'd be a tablet that has like Ludwig von Mises on it, on a tablet of yeah, you know, of LSD,
Murray Rothbard with a little bow tie on the back.
People always used to LSD. They, you know, a lot of it was on paper, on blotter paper.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
people would print all sorts of things on it, and it was kind of like branding. They still do, I guess. I don't know, but you know, so some of them were weird. Like, you know, a lot of them were like peace and love and unicorns and stuff. But one was Ozzy Osbourne, and I'm like, I don't think I'd want to take any Ozzy Osbourne acid. That sounds like a weird right, trip. Right. You know, and
at least lock up all your small pets and animals before you do that one.
You know, and then some of them, like I've seen in books and stuff and on websites, like, you know, someone's like a gun pointed at your face. You know, I don't know if that's DEA acid or what, but, you know, who knows? But yeah, there should be some bow tie Crokodile with Murray Rothbard on one side and just a bow tie on the back.
Well, you know, I think the Ludwig von Mises Institute or Mises.org, they sell, like, in their store, they sell bow ties with, like, little Ludwig von Mises crests and stuff.
Really?
And really? I remember I used to really want to buy a bow tie from them and be like, wear it on air and be like, yeah, wow, you don't know what this is. Cause you're
not. That's weird, though, because bow ties are also associated with black nationalism.
Black nationalism? Like Malcolm X and stuff?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, because Malcolm X.
Oh, yeah,
well,
I guess.
Yeah, because the what's the group now? They all wear bow ties. What are they called?
Black Panthers?
Nah, Black Panthers.
Nation of Islam.
Yeah, Nation of Islam. Yeah, they all wear bow ties.
Yeah,
I not guess all, you're right. But a lot of them do. You know.
I guess the bow tie is just so different from a traditional tie. So it's saying, hey, I'm still going to wear a tie, but it's going to be a different tie.
Yeah, yeah.
Although it's still a tie, and you're still wearing a suit.
Yep.
Although I like to wear suits and ties.
I know. Yeah, you like to be in drag for the state, for the man.
In drag for the state.
Yeah. You dress up and go like, I'm a pretty statist. Wearing your three-piece suit.
Oh, man. I don't even know.
Shooting
how to
Crokodile
to that.
In front of a mirror alone in a room, but like you feel like you're in there with three other chicks. Other chicks. Yeah.
Crying while I'm staring at an American flag.
So, Breaking Bad. I still maintain that Mike's not dead. We assume it was Mike's body in the trunk, but we never saw the face. Oh, wait. Should I have had a spoiler alert there?
I plugged my ears and was going la, 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 la.
I feel like there's no spoiler alerts anymore unless it's a movie. You know, if it's episodic stuff, it's like, You know, I mean,
that's part of the fun is to conjecture about what happened and what is currently happening.
And there's so many different delivery methods. Like, you know, if you're watching it on Netflix, you're still in season three. You know, but if you're on the torrents, you're. Hello, what happened?
Yep, I'm here. Sounded like a cord almost got unplugged there.
Yeah, I talked about torrents and the central scrutinizer cut me off.
It was literally for like a split second.
Yeah,
In related news, I finally did get Netflix.
Yay! So we can start reviewing the same shit. All right, then I got to review something from Netflix, or I'll just say it's great, and then you can go watch it. I finally watched Objectified, which is part three of Gary Huswit's design trilogy. You should watch it. It's the one that has, you know, it's design. Objectified is about industrial design. Helvetica is about graphic design and particularly about that font. And there's one about city planning. You should watch all of them. They're really good. Yeah.
Yeah. Although somebody said in the comments they watched Helvetica and said it was the most boring hour and a half they'd ever seen or something to that.
Yeah, effect. But that was a guy that like loves gun training films and nothing else, wasn't it?
Okay. I don't know. But
I'm just pulling his chain. I don't remember who it was, but yeah.
Okay. So what's the gist of Objectified again?
It's just about, damn, I need a new mic.
Did you hit the mic again?
Coming in. Hitting the mic. Yeah. I got to replace
it. Do you want to take a break and adjust it and cut off the last bit with all the, okay.
No, I want to leave it in. It's part of the process. All right. It's good for now, man. If I don't touch it, we're good. Okay, okay. So I have some more news about or a fact about films that's... Oh, you want to know about Objectified? No, go watch it, and then go watch the trilogy, and then we'll review them together.
Oh, wow. So I say I have Netflix, and all of a sudden I'm obligated to watch three
You're getting
movies.
Assignments. No, I have watch, trilogy watch, to watch. Watch 5 minutes of one of the movies, and if you don't love it, then we'll talk about what's wrong with you on the cast.
You'll do some attack therapy on me.
Yeah. I also want to say that somebody, I don't know who, put up torrents of DVD ISOs of two of my movies, the Hubert Selby movie and DIY or Die. And that will be tonight on the, a little after this comes out. If you look on the twitter.com/fiendtorrents, there'll be links to the magnet links for that.
Yay. Which movies again?
The Hubert Selby Jr. It'll Be Better Tomorrow movie and DIY or Die, How to Survive as an Independent Artist movie.
Which was your first film.
Yeah, and there's also the Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom is up there too. So if you want to be a Michael Dean completist and have DVD ISOs, which is basically you can burn a DVD from that is the DVD. I mean, it's perfect. It's got all the chapters, all the menus, all the DVD extras. It's full quality. Basically, with most most DVD burning programs, have the ability to convert
the ISO.
No, you just double click on the ISO and it usually opens up your DVD burning program.
Oh, nice. Nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
If not, you can download free things that do.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I have Ultra ISO or something to that effect. Which you can also make ISOs with that. Basically, an ISO is just a literal facsimile of the image that's on the CD. So
yeah, I have an ISO making program that I really like because it only does one thing. It does it really well. It makes ISOs and then makes DVDs from ISOs, and it's like 42K. I mean, you can email it to somebody.
Nice.
Should I email it to you?
Yeah, email it to me.
I'll do it right now.
Because I have Ultra ISO, and I find it to be clunky and too big for what it is. Like, there's too many options. It's like, was this tailored to burn DVDs? Was it tailored to be an ISO program? But if something's simple as you say it is, go ahead and email it to me.
Yeah, I'm looking for it. Yeah. I can't remember the name of it, but
excellent. Yeah. Any other news you can use or tech stuff, or should we jump into our topic for today? I wanted
to talk about quota pictures.
Oh, yeah. I did actually read
Quota Pictures,
that.
Or How Socialism Made England the Laughingstock of the Film World in 1920s. Basically, and I was watching this documentary about this famous or this really celebrated cinematographer who'd worked on a lot of great films, including Hitchcock and a bunch of other stuff. But he got his start in Quota Pictures. And I was like, Quota Pictures? I got to look that up. It sounds socialist. And it is. Basically, England in the 1920s was really disgusted by the politicians there were disgusted by the fact that, you know, 99.9% of the films being shown in England were made in Hollywood.
they were jealous, basically.
Right. So instead of, you know, allowing free market and, you know, not regulating things to allow England to have a film industry, they decided to force one, which was they made a law that 20% of all films shown in England had to be current, you know, like within the last year, and made in England. So that meant that suddenly they had to make films to fulfill that law. And the price was paid partly by the government and partly by film distributors who really didn't like the idea. So all of a sudden they were churning out dozens per week of really horrible films just to say, we got another film, we got another film, we got another film.
And because it's guaranteed to sell. Somebody's going to have to buy it because of the quota. Yeah.
And England went from being kind of nobody in the film world to being a laughing stock, which is far worse, you know?
Yeah, definitely. Wow. Yeah, I mean, it's completely ridiculous. And it goes to show you, if you get jealous that another country has a better film industry than yours, why don't you just go make your own films? Because then you'll actually have to work hard on them and make them high quality instead of forcing people at gunpoint to play whatever crappy films that the studios make just because the distributors are going to be forced to buy them.
Yeah. So I'm sending you this ISO creator. It's 52K, and it's called LC ISO Creator. So I'm stealing time from the fiends to send it to you. Okay. It'll probably get – didn't you have a thing where like .exes don't come through to you?
And no, it was a specific program. Everyone else, every other has worked fine.
Okay, if it doesn't, I'll put it – I'll send it to you some secret way, like through our encrypted – we have a little new way of communicating now. It's using off-the-record OTR chat, which is kind of looks like old AOL chat. But and it's based on it, but it's secure. We like it. It's good.
Yeah, it's worked so far.
I'm doing an interview at length about that and other security stuff soon. My fourth hacker interview coming up on the Gumbos in the next couple weeks.
Well, speaking of interviews and movies, you also told me you'll be interviewing. What is it, the director?
Gray State, which is tonight. I'm interviewing him. Comes out in 2 weeks. Gray State is a really cool looking documentary. It's only at the trailer stage right now, or extended trailer. It looks like kind of like Red Dawn. I mean, it's, you know, but it's basically the enemy that American citizens are having to fight against is FEMA instead of Russia, you know? And it looks incredibly well made for an indie movie. And generally when people say, I need money to get my movie made, I say, go make it cheap like I do. But this couldn't be made really, really cheap. I mean, this looks like a Hollywood production. It's amazing. And it's a really unique subject matter that couldn't get made this way in Hollywood.
Yeah. Okay. I'll have to check out the trailer. I'm actually on the website right now, and it does look really high quality and interesting. I kind of want to see it.
It really does.
I think this kind of future fiction is really, really good to the movement because, like you said, you have to visualize the state or visualize LibPair. I think it's also important to visualize the terrors that could come before LibPair.
Well, you know, they said in 1984, if you want a vision of the future, visualize a boot stomping a human face forever. This movie actually visualizes it for you.
There you go. Excellent.
It's gonna be the feel-good hit of 2013. No. I'm going to ask him, you know, he asked me, do you want to interview me or do you want to interview one of the actors? And I'm like, I want to interview you, man. I want to interview the director. You know, I think that people are asking to interview the actors more, so they're used to that. But I'm like, I don't care. I don't care what talking props have to say. I want to talk to the guy who came up with this. I also want to talk to him about the technology he's using because I'm pretty sure he's using Red, you know, those really, really high-def cameras.
Super expensive cameras.
And I definitely want to ask him some questions about that.
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends podcast. Freedom Fiends is now available for 24/7 streaming to your iPhone, Android phone, or other chromed robot turd. Click on the streaming audio link on freedomfiends.com. That's freedomfiends.com.
Hey, Hi, I'm Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends, and like you, I'm concerned with privacy on the internet. The electronic police state is strangling our previous protections, and the central scrutinizer is trying to squint into all areas of our lives. That's why smart people surf the net with a VPN or virtual private network. I use a VPN from Bola VPN. Bola VPN has your utmost security in mind and will allow you to surf, email, and do other computing tasks without leaving a trail of breadcrumbs across the internet. Unlike many other VPN providers, Bola VPN doesn't log traffic. With Bola VPN, you can change your apparent location or disappear completely. Bola VPN has been around since 2007, which is OG in the VPN world. Bola VPN is easy to install and configure. Best of all, it can be had for less than 25 cents a day, which is a small price to pay for this much security. And if you open a support ticket saying you heard about them through the Freedom Fiends, they'll add 3 extra days free. That's Bola VPN at BOLEHVPN.net. You've read books, attended lectures, and you know the Constitution well enough to know it's a well-crafted blueprint to create an ever-increasing federal empire. But there's still one thing missing.
Buttons!
Freedom Fiends now has buttons. We have Freedom Fiends, Anarchy Gumbo, and 2 designs for Guns and Weed the Road to Freedom. Wear them with pride. Use them to start conversations with statists. It's only $6 for 4 buttons, including shipping. Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the link at the top that says buttons.
Yeah. So, you haven't seen Boardwalk Empire yet?
No, I have not gotten a chance to yet.
Man.
Man.
You and your life. You and your endless vacations. You have it, though, right?
No, like I said, I still got about 20%. I haven't started my BitTorrent program up since I got home. Start we had another show to watch, which I won't say the name of it because it's kind of a guilty pleasure, and it's a show my wife's been wanting to watch.
What is it?
I'm not going to say it on air. And we finished it finally. So I have an opportunity to start watching Boardwalk Empire, but I haven't done it yet.
Well, I wanted to name drop something about it. Was when we first started watching it, we were like, you know, the opening credits has Steve Buscemi standing in, standing at the edge of the ocean while all these bottles of alcohol float in, you know, and you're kind of like, what's going to happen? And the music playing kicks ass. And I was like, God, what is this music? It sounds kind of 70s, but you can tell it's modern. And I looked it up and it's Straight Up and Down by the Brian Jonestown Massacre. I know those guys pretty well.
Oh, really?
Yeah. From San Francisco and L.A. And I'm really envious about it. Not because like it's a success and they're probably making money on it. Like they've been successful in their own way for a long time. And I know people who are a lot more successful, but I've always really wanted to have some music I used in somebody else's really cool movie or TV show. So I'm envious about that.
I see. And why is that? Because it will bring you a whole new audience that you didn't have before, or because it shows that some other artist saw the feeling that your work can bring to their own work?
No, it's the first thing. And then also, I would like to be a part of something like that.
Ah, okay.
It would be more self-satisfaction than somebody has, you know, blessed me like the Pope. But the song actually really sounds a lot like a couple other songs. One is Dear Mr. Fantasy by Traffic, and one is Season of the Witch by Donovan. So okay. if you know those songs you'll know what I mean.
I did listen to Dear Mr. Fantasy and did enjoy it thoroughly.
It's a good tune, man. It's a good tune. That's a good band. Yeah. Traffic, all these, man.
All this OG stuff, man.
Old people music. So let's see. I was going to say DJ met Neil Armstrong when she was a teenager.
Oh, really?
Cool. Yeah, he died recently.
What was he like? Or what did she remember of him?
Just some man.
just some guy that came by.
Yeah.
Walked on the moon.
When she grew up in Houston, and, you know, a lot of people were involved in NASA. So, you know,
was this pre-moon or post-moon?
I think it was post-moon. It was... Oh, yeah, because 69, yeah, she was like 10 in 69 when that happened. And this was over at her boyfriend's house when she was 16 or 17. Her boyfriend's father was a mathematician for NASA and was friends with Neil Armstrong. Yeah.
I see.
So did you read this, A Cry to Nationalize Facebook?
Yeah. It was completely ridiculous. It was on Slate. And I don't know where the guy gets off thinking that this would be a good idea. And he says in the intro, yeah, this may sound crazy, but I'm going to give you some reasons why it's not. But they're all reasons why he is crazy. So,
well, he believed that Facebook's privacy ideas, privacy, what's the word?
Privacy policy.
Mm-hmm. You know,
weren't adequate.
So we needed the government to control Facebook so it would have better privacy.
Yeah, it made no sense. Not only that, he also complained about how the privacy policy was vague and untransparent. And so again, why would you let the government control that? They're about as vague and untransparent as any organization I've ever dealt with.
That's like saying somebody's stealing packs of gum at the local supermarket. We should have the supermarket run by the mafia, and that'll never happen again. There won't be any gum stolen in that supermarket.
Right, right.
Crime will disappear if the mafia runs that supermarket.
Yeah. Well, he's upset that people are worried that their information gets sold to corporations and nobody knows who they get sold to. But would you rather have the government looking at every bit of information about you and knowing every detail
well, they
of your
already
life
are.
And where you're at?
I mean,
yeah, that's another thing.
Facebook
already
is nationalized, right, in a way. Right. But
and already, whenever the government asks the corporations for information, they're more than happy to bend over backwards to give that information to the government.
Well, did you hear that Apple just patented a technology to be able to shut off iPhones in a particular area using a radio signal?
Ooh. No, yeah. That's horrible. I didn't hear about that.
Which wouldn't just cut off their ability to like work as a phone, but it would cut off their ability to like work as a video camera, filming cops or whatever.
Oh, really? Yeah. So it would even kill all the offline stuff.
Yeah. So it's not, you know, it's not even just they're complying with something. I think that they're coming up with services they can sell to governments that will intrude on people.
Right, right. A new market for, or not a new market, but another market for them to expand into.
People are going to have to go back to like filming police abuse with like Super 8 cameras and reel-to-reel portable tape recorders.
Wow. Well, I also did, speaking of Apple, there was a thing I saw today, too, that some hackers hacked into an FBI laptop or database or something and found millions of iTunes accounts that they'd been looking into, and also Apple, some acronym like UDU information as well for
their
iPhones.
Wait, why would the FBI want to know which songs you're listening to?
I mean, your guess is as good as mine, but it's not just songs. I mean, iTunes also sells books, movies, yeah, everything.
Yeah. They want to
know TV shows.
They want to know if you've been watching that movie about the Red Army faction that I'm so fond of.
Yeah. they want to see how high you rate stuff by the Dead Kennedys.
Yeah. Yeah. There you go.
Or podcast. I mean, podcast. Yeah, all my podcasts come from iTunes.
What am I thinking?
iTunes.
Like, yeah, that's where, yeah, duh.
Derp.
Excuse me, I was laughing. There's a
but it seemed like it was information that the FBI would have had to request from Apple in some way.
Yeah.
According to what the hackers were looking at.
Wow. Yeah. You know, I have some news you can use about iTunes too, if you're still using it after that last segment. if you're subscribed to one of our podcasts through iTunes, they take about a day to update and be listed in there after they post, but they're still downloadable in iTunes immediately. All you have to do is right click on the name of the podcast and put update, go to update podcast, and they'll download immediately if they're new.
Yeah, yeah. I usually get them right on time. I just hit refresh, and then I can, there's a little drop down. You can open up the name of the podcast, and if there are episodes you missed, they'll be grayed out and you can double click on those.
Yeah. And I also, I always right-click on the name of the podcast and check do not auto-delete. And then sometimes you have to do that on individual episodes too, because iTunes likes to do too much for you and think it's cleaning house for you and delete an episode after you've listened to it. And sometimes it does it even if you listen to half of it and stop, and you're going to go back and listen later. If you update iTunes between then, it'll delete it.
Yeah. That's one of the reasons I was really reluctant to ever do iTunes. I was like, I don't want a program that's gonna, you know, make all these decisions for me. And I know you probably turn most of them off, but
I do.
I always wanted just like a thing that I could just see what files I have and drag and drop them myself and make all the decisions myself. But I'm also lazy. So once I got used to iTunes, I was like, yeah, whatever. Let it do its thing.
Speaking of Apple and its tyranny, there's an article on Yahoo. Want to track U.S. drone strikes? There will apparently never be an app for that.
Yeah, yeah, I saw that.
There was an app titled Drones Plus that shows you where the U.S. has done drone strikes around the world that week. And Apple banned it because they considered it objectionable and crude content. Yes, knowing who your taxes kill would be objectionable and crude.
Right. Yeah, I thought that was a little ironic of them to call it that.
You know, you could jailbreak the iPhone and use it from Android, and you could do it on an Android phone anyway. I think Steve Jobs...
Well, the other thing was it was all public information, too, so you could probably just look it up.
Yeah, but people like it at their fingertips. And, you know, I think that Steve Jobs didn't hate Android because he felt it copied some of Apple's OS. I think he hated Android because he didn't have control of the content.
Do you think he was? I mean,
he was a control freak.
He must have been a control freak
in a lot of ways. And people, I've heard people say he's libertarian because he did things like, you know, wouldn't have a license plate. He was not libertarian at all. He was incredibly.
He's libertarian for himself. He just didn't. He wanted to be the one in control instead.
Yeah, and he didn't really take care of business either. You know, like he was a billionaire, and his ex-wife was asking for $18,000 one-time payment for child support. And a DNA test had proved it was his kid. And he's like, I don't owe you nothing. You know, which I guess someone could say is libertarian compliant, but maybe not. And it just wasn't a good guy thing to do. Finally, his board of directors made him pay it because he was about to be interviewed in Time magazine.
Okay. So he did pay it eventually.
Yeah, I mean, he broke law. He did. When he was starting out, he first made money doing computing stuff, selling little boxes that could get you free phone calls. You know, he was hacking an IP system, that intellectual property system back in the day. That's how he financed Apple computers. But then later, he got really upset when other people did it. You know, that's kind of a common thing, too. Like the drummer in Metallica, you know, Metallica went out, sued their fans for sharing their stuff on
Lars.
Yeah. And on their first record, or not their first record, they had this band called like Back to the Garage or Garage Days or something. It's all cover songs, like recorded real fast and dirty after they'd become rock stars. And like the liner notes in it, and this is right before the BitTorrent thing, the liner notes in it, Lars wrote them. And he's like, yeah, I remember when we were starving and sleeping on each other's floors and, you know, sharing one sandwich. And we would stay up all night making cassette copies of, you know, mixtapes of each other's record collections.
Yeah, that's the same thing as sharing music online. It's just it's easier to do it online. Online makes everything easier, so don't feel so singled out, butthole.
Yeah, butthole. All right. I think we're done with the pregame show here.
We're done bitching about Lars and Metallica.
Let's get into Nancy Reagan and bitch about her. So, drug rehab in the state, part two of two.
Part two, yes. Where we last left you, we were talking about Nancy Reagan's Just Say No campaign. And do you have any personal stories from that era, Michael? Do you remember that still?
I was in 1981. Let's see, 64, 74, 5, 6. I was 17. I got kicked out of high school that year and went to college. And I didn't have a TV. I was aware of it. I don't think they tried it at our college. There were rumblings of it in my school right before I got kicked out in my boarding school. Teachers had mentioned it or whatever. I really, you know, I was busy getting drunk and smoking weed. I didn't have a TV. I didn't notice.
You're too busy saying yes.
I was too busy saying yes to care about her saying no.
Yeah. Well, here's the other thing. Implicit in Just Say No is, in parentheses, I feel like when you read it, is a or else.
Or we'll kill you.
Yeah, or else. Because, you know, as when this rolled out, so did the zero tolerance campaign, which we talked about. What a horrible phrase, zero tolerance. Like, we are not going to be tolerant of anything. We're going to treat everybody equally horribly.
Yeah.
And around that, or a little bit after that time, in 83 was when DARE started.
Well, before that, you skip the Betty Ford Clinic opens.
Yeah, I skip around to what was relevant to me.
But that's relevant to me, too, because you know, while this one first lady, Nancy Reagan, was saying, just say no or else, the other, you know, Ford's wife had a drug addiction and started a high dollar rehab in her name, or someone started it with her cooperation. And, you know, I mean, there's kind of the thing of, there's always kind of been the thing of redemption of, like, if you forsake drugs forever and get into recovery, you're okay to go on national television and talk about, you know, your lowest point. But yeah, it's kind of got this like Baptist redemption thing to it, I think, you know,
like this, born again, being this, born again.
The state has scrubbed you clean in prison or something.
You've been baptized by the state.
Also in 1982, Cocaine Anonymous was founded, which interestingly, Cocaine Anonymous was basically a bunch of rich people who didn't want to go to NA meetings. And then Cocaine Anonymous got really upset in 87 or 88 when crackheads started coming into Cocaine Anonymous.
Right. They're too ghetto for us. We're the cokeheads. We're a little bit.
I mean, you know, Cocaine Anonymous share is like, yes. And then I hit bottom. I had to sell one of my three BMWs, you know.
Right. I couldn't add that new wing to my mansion.
Yeah.
I don't know a whole lot about the Betty Ford Clinic. I guess that's why I just skipped it over. But I do remember a great line in a Tribe Called Quest song, where Q-Tip says, tonight is the night I get my groove on steady and get my drink on with that Ford named Betty.
Yeah.
Which I thought was clever.
You know, we're skipping the fact that she did a photo op of herself in South Central Los Angeles on a tank. Like,
oh, really? Like, we're going to war with the drug dealers?
We're going to bulldoze your house. Yeah.
We're going to bulldoze. Yeah. I feel like one of the reasons the state loves the drug war so much is because it's another great scapegoat for them to have. A war to fight that they can blame all of the ills of the world on these drug dealers and the fact that they don't have enough power to fight the drug dealers. And then the idiotic give them that power and cede that power to them, and also believe and buy the line that the problem isn't the state, the problem is these drug addicts.
Yeah, when actually, if drugs were legal, and we've said this before, we'll say it again, you know, cartel members, cartel leaders, you know,
would be picking bananas
or growing bananas. Although there is a lot of statism and war involved in bananas. If you know about the history of the banana republics, I mean, there have been wars fought basically by the military for United States Corporation. United Fruit, I think, was one of them, you know.
Right. You know, and I think they have some role in the Hawaiian, not independence, because they're not really independent.
The opposite. Stealing them, making a mistake.
Was Dole's banana plantation on one of the islands that I could see from my hotel room window when I was visiting Hawaii. Interestingly, though, now that Hawaii is part of America and subject to minimum wage laws, it became too expensive for Dole to keep their banana plantation there. So I think they've since moved it to the Philippines or something like that, someplace where they don't have to follow the minimum wage laws.
Yeah.
So not that minimum wage laws are good, but that's another discussion, and we've had that discussion before.
What else happened in 1983?
83, let's see. I don't have the list. I just have my notes on it. So I skipped over the DARE everything but the DARE program.
Well, 1983, the Colombian Medellin Mafia begins to do business in the United States, which I covered a lot of before on when I was reviewing that movie about the drug trade in Miami. And interestingly, like, a woman that was a big player in that and in that movie, Graciela somebody, who's like the grandmother of cocaine, they called her. She's now she was murdered this week. That's kind of interesting news. She was murdered in a drive-by shooting, and she'd been out of the business for a long time. And, you know, they blame it on rival cartels, but she was out of the business and retired. I think there was a state behind it.
And maybe thinking of some kind of memoirs or book deal.
Yeah, I think there was a state behind it. I think there was like a, you know, okay, enough time's passed, no one will really notice this. You know, let's do it.
Was it, I mean, is it obvious it was some kind of murder?
It was murder. It was obviously murder. It was a drive-by shooting when she was coming out of a deli. But, you know, who knows who did it? They say it was the cartels. And, you know, there's an interesting thing this week I heard on Free Talk Live was in Brazil this week, there were 21 murders, all connected to local elections, mayor and city council.
Mayor and city council.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. Somebody's protecting some kind of side deal.
Apparently. Yeah. 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 The state is just violence incarnate. And that's a good summation of that.
Yep.
Wow.
Yep.
Although, to get back to our sort of history here.
Dare.
Do you
dare.
I was going to talk about Dare. Yeah. Do you have any experience with Dare? Did your little girl go to Dare? And do you remember that?
She did. And she had a Dare t-shirt. She had two of them. And she actually, Ike said, can I have one? And I wore it ironically while being a heroin addict.
Okay. Okay. Excellent.
Yeah. They didn't have Dare when I was a kid. I missed Just Say Nancy by 2 minutes. And, but I did tell you that we had one narcotics. Well, I call him a narc. He was actually a police officer, but he was the guy in charge of drugs in our little town of Westfield, New York. And I had a crush on his daughter. And but they, when I was like in eighth grade, they came in. He would come into our school for every year for the new class, eighth grade, and you know, give them lectures. So that was kind of the proto Dare. But
okay.
You know, it wasn't a federally mandated, funded, organized thing like Dare.
Yeah, yeah. I don't remember us buying Dare at all. Anybody in my, I think it was sixth grade classroom. We all just thought it was a joke. And they gave us this workbook, and the workbook made it seem like a joke. Like it was, they didn't really make any arguments about it. It all seemed like BS, like just another school thing. And so it actually, I think, did the opposite effect because, it wasn't really a contest, but we would, deface our Dare books and draw like needles going into the arms of the Dare characters and joints in their mouths. And, it all was just, a way for us to talk about drugs and the different drugs we had done and wanted to do.
So, do you have any more notes for the 80s here, or you want to jump to the 90s?
Yeah, I think something important happened the year I was born, 1984, the National Minimum Drinking Age Act, where the feds wanted to raise the minimum drinking age to 21 instead of 18, which
it was 18 in some states and 21 in others. I told you,
right?
I live 10 miles from the border of Pennsylvania, and
you guys would drive over.
Well, my older sister's friends would.
Okay, okay. For a beer run and bring it back, or you guys would go there and, like, party?
I don't know what they did, but I know that that was something discussed with, you know, clucking of tongues in my house by my parents.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I lived in Texas and in Louisiana. Well, I guess it had stopped by the time I was 18. But in Louisiana, they held on to the 18 age for a long time, because in Louisiana, drinking is kind of a big business. I mean, people go to New Orleans and they party, and there's Mardi Gras, and drinking is important. I mean, you can buy liquor. You can buy Jack Daniels at a gas station and have it poured into a styrofoam cup with ice. And I think Louisiana held out for maybe it was the longest. I'm not 100% sure on that.
Probably, because it's such a tourist thing.
Right. One of the long, if not the longest running 18 age, then definitely up there.
Yeah.
And the state would withhold highway funds.
Right.
So they wouldn't give you federal highway funds. And so it's anecdotal that whenever you drive to Louisiana, you complain about the roads being crappy because Louisiana didn't change with everybody else.
Which is, you know, just another indication of the state having its fingers in the other state's thing. You know, if you ever want to enforce state rights, the 10th Amendment, you can't, because even if you can, the federal government is going to screw you in some other way. So
right.
Being dependent always creates vulnerabilities.
Oh, and, completely. In every situation, not just government. It's also an example of how the state uses roads to bribe you or blackmail you into doing their bidding. They make you believe that roads are the most amazing thing in the world, and they're the only providers of roads. You cannot get roads without us, people.
For more on this, watch Boardwalk Empire, which is a bunch of politicians who are in their own mafia buying up all the land where they know the swampland where they know the roads are going to go in New Jersey, so they can sell them for 100 times as much.
Yeah.
Sell the land for 100 times as much.
Oh, they love the road thing, don't they? All of
them. Yeah, but our hero Nookie gets screwed over by his wife on that. Would this be a deal breaker? I mean, a spoiler?
I don't know, man.
She's pissed off at him, and he's facing federal time. He signs his assets over to his wife, who's a good Catholic woman. And, you know, she's supposed to sign him back after he's cleared, and he's cleared.
And she doesn't give
by bribing some judges and murdering some witnesses, he's cleared. And yeah, she signs it over to the church, man. Signs the land over to the church for the roads.
Nice. Well, does he kill her?
I don't know. That's where the last set, it ends. It starts up again in 2 weeks.
Oh, okay.
Probably not, but he's not going to be very happy.
No.
So a bunch of other stuff happened in the 80s and 90s of laws, like minimum sentencing, minimum punishment.
Mandatory minimum sentencing?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, which is a completely horrible thing. And when Randy England was talking to us, I brought that up, you know, things should be on a more case-by-case basis than not. And he said, well, yeah, but usually people de facto end up ruling the same way on things, or juries can think in similar ways if a standard is built anarchically. But when the state does something like mandatory minimum sentencing, then the judge is forced, even if the facts of the case would have a reasonable person to believe that this person shouldn't go to jail for life or for 10 years or for 15 years, the judge's hands are tied. Yeah. And he can also use that as an excuse. I mean, he can use that as
my hands are tied.
Yeah. I mean, how can people really think the state has your best interest at heart when they don't? These laws, these mandatory minimum sentences, are written by politicians who don't have personal experience with you as the defendant or even the person who was wronged. And I feel like it's a good example that the state can do no good with these laws.
I see drug laws as being very much a parallel with former sodomy laws. You know, like pretty much most people now accept, well, homosexuals should, even people that don't think they should be able to marry, like don't, most people, hopefully, don't think they should be thrown in prison for being gay.
Right.
In the 50s, they were thrown in prison for being gay, you know, and that's kind of where drug laws are now. They're like, everyone's agreeing that something that, you know, isn't really a crime with a victim should be punished like a really serious crime.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
And some way more serious than others, like Gene Simmons, the guy from Kiss. That's his name, right? Gene Simmons.
Yeah, he wants to kill people.
Wants to kill them. Kill drug dealers.
I still say, man, Republican rock musicians are just, it's like, really? Like, you had this whole career being like scary and defiant, and like you're Republican. That's even squarer than being an Obama humping Democrat. Although that's
it's the same.
It's a little squarer, man.
Each is worse than the other.
Is worse than the other. And on that, let's take a little sales pitch here. All right.
Want to contribute to liberty but short on cash? You can help the Freedom Fiends without even spending a post-1964 dime. Download uTorrent and start seeding Fiends episodes. Follow twitter.com/fiendtorrents to grab the past episodes and new ones as they post. Leave your computer on, seeding the torrents, while you're at work or asleep. The more people seeding the fiends, the more drone-proof we'll be when the boot comes down. That's twitter.com/fiendtorrents.
You can subscribe to Freedom Fiends via the RSS link on the top right of any page. It's orange. Or you can subscribe via email at the subscribe by email link at the top of the right sidebar on any page. It's a little bit below the search field. You'll need to respond to a one-time confirmation email, but after that, you will only receive an email each time a new episode posts. The Freedom Fiends respect your privacy. We will not spam you and will not sell, rent, or share your email address. And you are free to unsubscribe at any time.
All right. So 1990s, the internet arrives and online recovery support groups and services become commonplace.
Okay.
What they don't mention in this whole list is 21 years later, Silk Road founding allows for anonymous drug sales over the internet.
Although, I mean, it's not ubiquitous yet. I mean, really, it's still just a concept. I mean,
it's a proof of concept. I mean, I think like four people have used it, and one of them is Stacy Litz.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like well known, well used, well traveled of a road as far as Silk Road is.
Although, as far as
you don't,
know,
you don't hear anybody talking about it, but libertarians.
Stacy getting bust and Wired magazine, yeah, and politicians who want to ban the internet. Right. Although, as far as we know, Stacy Litz getting busted had nothing to do with Silk Road. She got the drugs there. She got busted because she sold to a stranger. I think that she is proof that Silk Road works because she was able to order quantities of drugs on it more than one time.
Yeah, yeah, and yeah, like you said, Silk Road, that's not what they used to track her down. They used traditional Fed goon methods or
shoe leather.
Methods.
Shoe leather. Yeah.
Shoe leather. What do you mean shoe leather? Oh,
boots. Shoe leather is what old cops say when they're bitching about, you know, computer CSI type stuff. They're like, you know, how'd you solve crimes without all these computers back in the day? And they're like, shoe leather. You know, walking and talking, asking questions, beating people up. Yeah. So what you got next on your list here? I would say, interestingly, is 1982 to 1997, drug use among teenagers spikes, which follows a bunch of drug laws. You know, and I think really the drug laws increase drug use. And this has been shown in countries where drugs are legal or decriminalized. Because when drugs are illegal, there becomes a, you know, mafia controlled conduit to keep them coming because it's worth it to them. When they're legal, it's not worth it to them to do that. So you outlaw drugs, you increase the number of people using drugs.
Yeah, and I think that that may be more true for young people than adults as well. A, if it's a forbidden fruit, and also B, if you have to go to a drug dealer to get something, that drug dealer's likely to have other things to try to get you interested in as he tries to expand his market.
Yeah, I remember in San Francisco when I was doing heroin, right about the time I stopped doing heroin, you know, you used to be able to buy, for $20, you buy a little bag of heroin in a balloon of tar heroin, which was a quarter gram, roughly, for $20-$25. Right around the time I stopped, the Mexican drug dealers there stopped selling that and started only selling what's called a one-in-one. And a one-in-one was the same balloon, but it had two little baggies in it, and it had half as much heroin in one baggie and cocaine in the other baggie. And like literally, like a lot of heroin addicts were so just into heroin that when this started happening, you could go down to the drug corners and you could find the little baggies, you know, BB size baggies of cocaine
just laying around on the ground.
On the ground. Yep.
Wow.
Yep. But they were trying to get you hooked to the other drug.
Yeah.
And it wasn't even free samples. It was just like suddenly half of what you're paying for was a drug you weren't looking for.
Right. Right. And there's no real market recourse to that either because they're freaking cartel that's monopolized by the government's violence
on the whole market. If somebody else had stood on that same corner just selling, you know, the $20 bag, a quarter gram of heroin, they probably would have been shot.
Yeah, exactly. Yep,
because they have the protection of the government. So,
yeah. And not only did the drug use spike during the 80s, but also in the 90s to 2000, from 1990 to 2001, drug use increased among high schoolers by 8%. And it was 8% used weed regularly in 92 and 20% by 2001. So it more than doubled in a little less than 10 years.
Yeah.
Just basic pot.
And 1992, Washington, D.C. Mayor Marion Barry is arrested in a drug sting. And that was an FBI sting with a hooker who was in with the FBI. They probably busted her and turned her. And it was in a hotel room and it was filmed. And there's video of that. You can go on YouTube and it's him saying, "Bitch, set me up." And, you know, I lived in D.C. a few years before that. I lived in San Francisco, then I moved back to D.C. for a summer, and I lived at 15th and Belmont, which is across the street from Malcolm X Park. And as I've said, anywhere in America across the street from Malcolm X Park is not a great neighborhood. It was a crack neighborhood, and it was pretty much the summer of crack. It was like 88, 89, like when it'd been there for a couple of years and it was really taking hold. And Marion Barry was the mayor then. And, you know, when the mayor's smoking crack, you can expect there's crack on the city streets.
Yeah. I would imagine so. Yeah. Yeah.
Yep.
You know, all the other stuff's more recent, and I didn't find too many noteworthy things.
Well, there's one that's noteworthy to me is 1995, the FDA approves the use of naltrexone to treat alcoholism. I was in the study for that through the Haight-Ashbury Detox Clinic.
Okay.
After I got clean off dope, now,
you had a lot of studies.
I was, man. Well, hey, you know, you got to make a living in San Francisco when you don't want to work. Yeah. Naltrexone is basically very similar to the drug that they give you when you OD. It's an opiate blocker. Mm-hmm. You know, when someone's dying and ODing, they don't shoot you up with adrenaline like in Pulp Fiction. That would kill you in your heart. But they shoot you up with naltrexone. And if your heart's still beating, it'll bring you out of being OD'd so quickly you'll be dope sick if you're an addict. It just blocks all the receptors in your brain. It's actually used similar to Anabuse, which is something they give alcoholics. You know, you take Anabuse every day, and if you drink, you get really sick. Mm-hmm. You know, yeah. It's for people that aren't ready for recovery but don't want to drink. I mean, it's so potent that, like, even if you use aftershave with alcohol, it'll make you sick. So, but naltrexone has a kind of similar use, other than bringing people back from ODs, is a similar thing with addicts. If you take it every day and then you shoot dope, nothing will happen. And it takes about 3 days of not taking it before you can feel dope. And, but it's also, it had some use in supposedly treating alcoholism, because it blocked the receptors that had a connection to how alcohol creates pleasure. Mm-hmm. And I was in the study for that.
Wow. So it's the drug that makes doing drugs not fun.
Yeah, that sounds like a government-approved drug to me.
It does.
Yeah.
That's funny. The next one I had was in 2010. Do you have any other ones you considered noteworthy or milestones in the history of the drug war
If you're at the welfare thing, I'm with you.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I also think it was
2010. Four of the largest drug busts in history occur.
Yeah, that's where I was going
to
go next.
Leading to tons of methamphetamine, marijuana, cocaine, and I'm like, how's that drug war working out for you? Did that stop it? You know. Like, yeah, the thing they can brag the most about, they can stand on this warehouse full of drugs and say, look what we did, in their goon outfits, you know, with their drugs and money they stole. And nothing's changed, man. Nothing changed the next, you know, the places were probably dry for half a week, and then somebody else or the same people came in and filled the void.
Yeah.
It's free exactly. Market, baby.
The void will always be filled as long as the void's there. I mean, the market is like water.
Find the hole.
It flows over everything and seeps into the cracks.
Like that rapper dude says in Guns and Weed, the Road to Movie. Guns and Weed, the Road to Movie.
Yeah. Yeah.
He goes, find the hole, man. Find the hole. Which I thought was cool and kinky. Find the hole.
Yeah. Yeah. And it completely works. In this drug bust, what was it? In these four drug busts, there was like $318 million worth of drugs? Or was it billion?
Million,
okay. Still.
Yeah.
I mean, also just think about all the money that they steal in just those actions. And I know a lot of drug dealers maybe didn't acquire that by the appropriate means. And you can't really put a price on what drugs would be in the free market, because there's no market pricing mechanism.
I think you can.
Can you? Yeah. I don't know how accurate it's as accurate as the Soviets trying to figure out.
I think
price
it would be at least as cheap as the pharmaceutical equivalents are, and probably a lot cheaper. You know, I mean, I've had, like, you know, when I had a broken arm, I got codeine. You know, I had a like hairline fracture from skateboarding once, and they gave me codeine, and I went to the store and had it filled, and it was generic, and had it filled generically. So, and it was $8 for 50 pills. What's that a pill? Dude, you got to mute when you cough. And yeah. I'm not supposed to point that out, but we are a teaching hospital. So
the thing about it, though, Michael, is you can't decide what would be worth it to people if you took away the illicitness of all the black market drugs. You can't decide which people or how many people would decide, hey, I'd rather take the cocaine than the codeine, or the heroin than the codeine, or I'd rather smoke pot than go get myself various cocktails of pharmaceuticals to combat my MS. Plus all the recreational users. You can't really know what they'd be willing to pay in the absence of the drug war. I think it'd be cheaper, personally. I think all the prices would be a lot cheaper, but
okay.
I don't know what they would be.
But I think this is a decent starting place to figure it out, okay? Like, the pharmaceutical drug, okay, let's say five of those would get you damn high. So it would be 80 cents for a dose of narcotics. It'd be less than 80 cents for a dose of narcotics that would get you really effed up.
Okay.
Instead of $20 on the street corner cut with cocaine, you know. So yeah. 80 cents, and that's from a pharmacy who has all sorts of, like, hidden costs that involve the government too. So instead of 80 cents, I think it'd be about 15 cents. So I think it'd be about 15 cents to get high on any drug. I mean, what does alcohol cost, you know, if you take away the taxes?
If you take away the tax, that's the other thing. You don't really know what alcohol would cost in a free market system either, because there are tons of taxes. There's regulations that people have to jump through. Regulations and monopolies in some states to where, you know, the alcohol price is increased because the state has a monopoly on selling alcohol and they up the price so they can use it to buy schools and various.
I'm still going to say drugs would, all drugs would be 8 cents a dose. Okay. I mean, marijuana could be grown industrially at about the same price, you know, that parsley is grown. And what's parsley? Like $4 a pound in the supermarket?
Or cilantro or something like that.
Yeah. And you say, well, people would be willing to pay more. You can't really say what they'd pay in a free market. I say somebody would undercut them to the point where it would be 20% more than what it costs to make.
Okay.
You know,
I think that's how
free market works.
Yeah. So let's buy the premise and quit quibbling about theoretics.
8 cents a dose. All drugs would be 8 cents a dose, and that's going to be the name of this episode. No, we've already named this episode.
So what does that mean though? Let's accept your premise here and say that all drugs would be 8 cents a dose. How do you think that affects society?
Party time, man.
Party time. Well. I mean, first of all, what do people say about drug addicts as being a big problem? One of the things is, oh, they go break into your car and steal your car stereo.
That wouldn't happen anymore. Because, you know, like let's say even if you got, you know, a $100 a day heroin habit would now cost you about
$8.
$3.20. So you can panhandle $3.20. Anybody could do it. There'd be no incentive to break into people's houses, man.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I guess that would be the big thing. So the moral of that story, get rid of the state and we'll have cheap drugs for everyone.
I don't know if that would be an incentive for a lot of statists. Drugs. Yeah. I think that's going to be, I mean, the name of this episode was supposed to be Drug Rehab and State Part 2, but I really think I want to call it All Drugs Would Be 8 Cents a Dose. I think that's more SEO compliant and
SEO compliant.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's going to bring the clicks.
Yeah. Okay. How drugs could be 8 cents a dose or something like that. I'll work on it. So,
okay.
I think we're done with our timeline here. We wanted to get into some real world kind of stuff about some rehabs like Synanon and some things about attack therapy and kind of some spin-offs of the state's involvement and drug rehabs that act like the state and impact training, all sorts of stuff.
Yeah. And so Synanon.
Let's start with Synanon because it's very interesting.
And very, very creepy.
Synanon was...
When did it start? You 60s start. Or 70s?
1958.
Okay. Yeah. Okay, and by the early 60s, it had become an alternative community, attracting people with its emphasis on living a self-examined lifestyle, as aided by group truth-telling sessions that came to be known as the Synanon Game.
And it was permanently disbanded in 1989 due to alleged criminal activities, including attempted murder, civil legal problems, and federal tax evasion.
Right. It sort of morphed into its own sort of approximation of the state. In the way they wanted to force you to stay, didn't want you to leave.
Wanted you to marry within the cult. You know, they strongly encouraged you to actually cut off contact with people who were not in Synanon and marry. You know, they'd have dating dances to get you.
They would want married couples who joined at the time to break up and take new partners so they could do it within the Synanon paradigm. Men got
creepy.
Forced vasectomies. Pregnant women were forced to have abortions.
Critics had their arms broken.
Yeah. So,
allegedly, right.
So it seems allegedly. Very violent. Did you have any personal experience with Synanon or Synanon like organizations?
No, man. It was completely disbanded by the time I was, you know,
getting
heavy into drugs.
Okay. And it borrows from different, psychological philosophies.
I got a connection though. Synanon also inspired the creation of successful programs such as the Delancey Street Foundation. I used to do service at Delancey Street in San Francisco. I used to bring in an NA speaker and bring a meeting there. And it was, It was a facility for teenage boys, and it was all like kids with mostly serious, like violent felony records. You know, I mean, I was kind of scared going in there actually, but they were uber polite. I mean, they were, whatever they were doing to those kids was probably really spooky because, or you know, seemed that way to me because, these look like kids who would probably stab me on the street and they were so polite. And whenever, on the rare occasion that one of them would kind of act up or, you know, do anything that wasn't compliant, the moderator in the room would say something to him, like it wasn't timeout, but it was something like that. And the kid would fold his hands across his knee and look at the floor for the rest of the hour.
Right, right. Yeah. Sort of reminds me of those afternoon talk shows where they have the boot camp. They have like the troubled teens and they play like the montage of them yelling at their parents and stuff like that. And then they have some, you know, boot camp sergeant come in and yell at them. Yeah. And I feel like it's not really healthy work because what you're doing is you're beating people into submission rather than helping them to create a sense of wellness internally that will actually be
I'll say one thing from experience with people who've been through things like that, because I know people who've been through things like that. A lot of them end up in NA. It may create a compliance for a while that looks like a success, but when those people go out and mess up afterwards, they do it spectacularly.
I can imagine, because it's all sort of building up in them, I'd imagine. Yep. Because what they're doing is they're delaying their gratification because they're almost being forced to. But they're not changing what gratifies them, which I feel like is more the idea behind AA and NA, is change yourself from wanting drugs to gratify you rather than just delay that gratification at somebody else's yelling and insistence.
So the founder of Synanon was recorded by the police, LAPD, saying, "We're not going to mess with old time, turn the other cheek religious postures. Our religious posture is don't mess with us. You can get killed dead, literally dead. Those are real threats. They are draining life's blood from us and expecting us to play by their silly rules. We make the rules. I see nothing frightening about it. I'm quite willing to break some lawyer's legs, next break his wife's legs, and threaten to cut their children's arm off. That's the end of that lawyer. That is a very satisfactory, humane way of transmitting information. I really want an ear in a glass of alcohol on my desk." And then later, shortly after that, that founder, Dietrich, the founder of Synanon. Did I say Al-Anon? No, Synanon. We're talking about Synanon. Dietrich was arrested while drunk. Okay, this guy who's like, "I'll kill people who criticize my method for keeping people sober," was later found drunk. That's kind of awesome.
Wow. Is it almost a power corrupts kind of thing? I mean, I could see starting a group like this, and maybe even if you have good intentions at the beginning, once you get this sort of cult-like following, it's a lot of power you have over people, especially if your methods are basically brainwashing and forcing people into behaviors that aren't natural to them or aren't initiated by those people. Well, I could see you getting a power trip.
That seems to me like, yeah, you know, my opinion is that that's what happened with the SPLC. You know, they're not a drug rehab, but the Southern Poverty Law Center started out as, you know, kind of a peaceful little like, okay, we're going to catalog hate groups that commit violence. And then it spread into this whole thing of like, you know, giving
classes. We stand in judgment
and giving classes to the Pentagon, and not just opinions, but like policy, like giving classes to the Pentagon and giving memos to Department of Homeland Security that they act on, saying
fusion
that,
centers,
you know,
and local police departments.
Yeah,
as well.
saying that, you know, if you're a returning soldier who mentions the Constitution and you own guns, you should be detained. You know,
right?
Which
right.
has been happening lately.
Right. And the government enabled them by taking these sort of prescriptions and beliefs from the SPLC. And so the SPLC sort of got the message that they were the ones who gets to judge these kinds of things. And I think you're right that power could have, I mean, obviously has gone to their heads.
Well, you want to talk about, like, you know, groups getting power and imitating the state. Much of the violence by Synanon had been carried out by a group within Synanon called the Imperial Marines.
Mm-hmm.
So they had their own army, you know.
Right, basically. Even taking the nomenclature of the state and using the same kind of terminology.
Two Synanon members placed a derattled rattlesnake in the mailbox of attorney Paul Morantz of Pacific Palisades, California. Morantz had successfully brought a suit on behalf of a woman abducted by Synanon. The snake bit him and almost killed him. Derattled, so you don't know it's there. You know?
Right, right. Yeah, that's just sick.
Well, let's go sell some stuff and then come back and talk more about this.
Okay. Go, go, freedom fiends. Freedom fiends.
Since time began, tyrants have taken aim at personal liberties. Now there's a movie that aims back.
The government has no more right to tell us what to put in our bodies than they have to take our guns or tell us what books we can read.
Six drug police were eaten by bears while raiding a marijuana farm.
On your knees, you dirty hippies!
Jesus.
On your knees!
What's the problem, officer?
Today, many cops who enforce pot laws do so only because it provides them with cushy jobs, good benefits, and a chance to push people around.
I was an undercover narcotics officer. The drug war is nothing but a farce.
The Second Amendment says you gotta keep you and your gat intact.
Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom. A film by Michael W. Dean and Nima Vadavi.
DVD available now at gunsandweed.com or on Amazon. That's gunsandweed.com. Makes the perfect gift. Remember, that's gunsandweed.com.
Yo.
Yo. So, all right. the main bit, other than threatening and murdering and threatening to murder, Synanon basically pioneered something called attack therapy, which... Okay, the definition is it's a controversial type of psychotherapy evolved from ventilation therapy, which that sounds like suffocating you, I don't know. But it involves highly confrontational interaction between patient and therapist or between patient and fellow patients during group therapy in which the patient may be verbally abused, denounced, or humiliated by the therapist or other members of the group. And Synanon, other groups... employed in large group awareness training, which impact training is a form of that, and you've had some experience with that.
Yes, yeah. I have. My ex-stepmom was into it, and her sister was the one who brought her into it, because one of the things about impact training is when you're done with it, after they've brainwashed you, one of the things they implore you to do is sign other people up. Like, go grab your family members and bring your family members here.
Pyramid scheme. Cult.
Sort of. And my stepmom got whisked away into these impact trainings, were really popular.
I'm not saying it's a cult. I'm saying that is an indicator of cults.
It has some very cult-like qualities that you can see from what people have described, both on the internet and in my own experience, which is secondhand. But my stepmom, she had gone to these things. She was obsessive about telling us about it and what it did to help her, but she wouldn't ever be specific. Like, I'd be like, well, what are some of the things you learned? What are the reasons that I would want to do it? Trying to get her to say, hey, okay, you're trying to sell me on this. Actually sell me on it. But it's all very secretive. So didn't really want to get into any details. I've actually looked it up and did a little bit of research. There was one person who was sort of coming at it from a Mormon perspective, because like I said, this kind of stuff's really popular in Utah. And he had some very big problems with it, but they were more theological and, well, this isn't true to Heavenly Father. But I did find something in a website called Ripoff Report. Their motto is "By consumers for consumers."
Yeah, which is kind of like independent, similar to Better
it's
Business
like
Bureau.
It's like user content based Better Business Bureau and or Consumer Reports, but all the stuff is written by actual consumers. So not only can you write a note to the business that has ripped you off, but you can also let everybody see what has happened to you. And so this is from somebody who was actually doing impact trainings and decided it was ruining his life and so quit after, I think, 2 years. And he sort of shed some light on what actually happens in these things. And attack therapy is definitely how I would categorize it, where they basically beat you into a pulp and then try to remold you in their own image.
Which, you know, is done from everything from like the Moonies to, you know, any army in the world does the same thing.
Right. Right. Yeah, very similar when you read it to something that might happen in basic training or some type of government program in America and back in Nazi days and stuff like that.
I'd say that AA does it too, but it's a lot more voluntary and less...
But there's a difference between it being introspective and coming externally.
AA has you do written exercises with a sponsor to, I wouldn't say break you down to nothing. It's more like re-examine a lot of preconceptions you have.
Right. Let me read some of this, this not user, but this impact trainee. Let me read some of his thoughts from going through the various process. He started with something called quest training, which I guess is the first part of impact training. He says, when I attended the quest training, it cost $550. Quest consists of 4 days of mostly intense and degrading activities that are designed to teach trainees obedience to the trainer. Once that obedience has been established, the trainers and staff are able to manipulate the trainees' emotions at will. This emotional control is used repeatedly throughout the rest of the series to keep people paying for more training and enrolling their family and friends. After several days of degradation and a final day where the impact trainers begin to espouse the early stages of their religious beliefs, the quest training ends with a quote-unquote graduation and a final activity where all of the quest trainees are either enrolled into the next stage of the training or publicly chastised for selling out.
Huh.
So I think that's another important thing to consider is, you know, not that the profit motive is wrong, but if you're giving somebody this kind of control over you to where they basically beat you up and then don't give you any kind of reconciliation until you do what they tell you, they're obviously going to tell you to give us more money. And to bring your friends and family in to bring us more money as well. And more on the abuse factor. He says that he did end up going for the second stage, which is called Summit. Cost $795. And this is, I think, in 2007. So I imagine the prices are probably more expensive now. He says that Summit begins with a day of degradation where trainees are assigned alternate names, such as Daddy's Joy Toy, Womb for Rent,
Ew.
Still Nursing, Pee-wee pervert, etc. And then they're required to visualize themselves dying and being placed in coffins because they do not deserve to live.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah. Other degradations include having the overweight women dress up as cows, whales, and belly dancers and be ridiculed by the audience.
Wow. I've lost 7 pounds, by the way. No.
Oh, really? And you didn't have to have somebody abuse like you into it?
No, I actually ate a lot of cow.
Ate a lot of cow.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Yeah, impact training. Sounds creepy.
Yeah.
And they're current, so I'm careful what I say about them because these people kind of tend to – this kind of organization tends to be really litigious. So,
right.
I'm giving opinions. I'm not – yeah. Yeah.
But, I guess the other personal thing is after the impact training – my stepmom became, I guess selfish isn't necessarily a bad thing, but she came, how's this? She was much less of the kind of person who would regard other people's feelings. She basically abandoned our family in a lot of ways. And I, of course, you know, I'm not sure how much of this I can put on impact training or put on her specifically, because a lot of the way she felt was revealed in a recording that was actually taken of her at one of those tarot card readers or psychics. She loved to go to these psychics, where she's basically waiting for my dad to die, like hoping for my dad's death and being disappointed because the psychic told her that my dad would die in a month and he hadn't died yet. So she's like, well, when's he going to die? Ugh. And she's like, well, you know, sometimes the psychic's like, well, sometimes I'm a little off on the timing. So, you know, he might have a car wreck soon, because the other thing was my dad had completely kicked his prostate therapy's ass. So that was one of the reasons my stepmom had believed the psychic, is because the psychic said my dad was going to die. He had prostate cancer, but he killed it in like a month or two, and he was just fine, and he's completely healthy now. And she goes back to the psychic and is like, well, he didn't die. He got cured from his prostate cancer. And the psychic was like, well, you know, maybe it'll be a car wreck in a month or something like that. Ugh. And so it was very callous and very much self-centered. And I can't help but wonder if some of that self-centeredness came from this sort of impact training, where I guess a lot of times the goal is to only care about your immediate concerns, and also that the ends justifies the means. I mean, you can see it in their method, that they don't care about hurting you in the meantime, as long as they get the approved results that they want. And I feel like that philosophy can bleed over into people. So that was my sort of rant about impact training. Again, I haven't taken it myself, but any kind of organization that abuses you to get you to do the things they want seems like a very questionable practice to me.
You were impacted by impact training.
I was impacted by impact training, yes.
I actually have some personal experience with another attack therapy cult. Well, I'll call this one a cult. I can't call impact therapy that because they still exist. There was something in the 70s and 80s called EST, E-S-T, mm-hmm. which was Erhard Seminars Training, which was founded by Werner Erhard. It was a two-week course, 60 hours, where they basically lock you in a hotel conference room and yell at you and, you know, challenge you to change everything about you and remake you in their image. Mm-hmm. It's had a lot of notable participants, including Cher, Cloris Leachman, Yoko Ono, Jeff Bridges, John Denver, Diana Ross, and Douglas Engelbart, who basically invented the internet. We talked about him. Hmm. He did that, the mother of all demos. He invented the computer mouse, the graphical user interface,
right,
networking, all sorts of things. I don't know if these people had their successes despite this or because of this or what, but my experience with it was in 1984. I was in DC playing in this band called The Day I Lost My Virginity with my friend Peggy and this drummer named Michael Sulkind, who is an attorney now. And Michael Sulkind took me to an EST indoctrination meeting on Halloween 1984. And it's kind of interesting because I just now learned, looking at the Wikipedia article, that EST dissolved in late 1984. So I was there, you know, weeks before the end. And they were still behaving like it was an active, like, wonderful, like, this will change your life. Now, I was homeless at the time. I was literally living in an abandoned factory. And they gave this presentation of, you know, how great it is, and people gave testimonials, and again, they didn't say what it really was, and when people asked, they wouldn't really say. Mm-hmm. But then they went around and broke up into groups and had people come around on the tables and try to hard sell you on it, and, you know, it was like $550 for the seminar, and they're like, okay, Michael, your name's Michael? How are you going to get the $550? And I'm like, I don't know where my next meal's coming from. Literally. Yeah. And they're like, no, but this will really help you and you'll end up making money and it'll be great. And do you have some family you can call? Do you have any friends? Can you borrow it? Do you have anything you can put up, you know, for collateral and get a loan? I mean, they were really hard sell, and I was friggin' homeless and they were trying to get $550 out of me.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I feel like you get a sense of that from all of these types of things, is it's really more about the self-interest of the people administering it. But at the same time, they're selling it as something that's going to make you better.
Yeah.
So I feel like they don't really have your best interest at heart. If they're trying to get a homeless person to put up something for a loan or to ask his family for money so he can go to this rather than ask for help getting a job or a house. An apartment.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm really wary by nature of anything like that, of anybody who's like, this is the way, this will help you, this will change you, which is actually why I initially rejected libertarianism, because I ran into some people when I was about 18 who were Libertarian mm-hmm. Party members who were very religious about it. They, you know, I don't think they wanted to lock me in a room and scream at me, and, you know, I guess that's what we do on the Freedom Fiends, but people can turn us off. So
exactly. We're not forcing anybody to listen to it. We're not bringing them to conventions and hard selling them on it and asking them to pawn all their guns so that they can listen to the Freedom Fiends.
We're more like AA. Our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion.
Mm. Exactly. And that's a good point, too. I think if you have some kind of philosophy or something like that you're trying to push, you should just spit it out and let people decide on its own merits. It should be about the message itself. And if a message itself is truly paradigm changing, I think it's self-sustaining. And I mean, I think if 99% of the people out there preaching Liberty Now just stopped preaching it, I think the same amount of people would step in immediately and start doing the same kind of work. I don't think that libertarianism can be considered a cult because of this kind of a thing. We're not secretive about it. The argument is self-sustaining, and we're more than happy to explain it to somebody if they ask. But not proselytizing and going door to door and trying to force it on people.
I just sent you a link. Grab it. I guess we could close up with this unless you have – do you have more on any of this? Before I go off on a tangent and tie it up in a pretty bow.
No, I think we've sort of wrapped up these pseudo cult-ish self-help programs. And I guess I just want to say be wary of these kinds of things that promote to change your life if you'll only fork over a large amount of money.
Yeah. Well, I want to tie it back into the state. If you check out that email I just sent you, there was a spinoff. There were two spinoffs. There was a spinoff of Synanon that was called The Seed. And The Seed turned into something called Straight Incorporated, which turned into...
Scared Straight?
Which begat dozens of clones and copycats, including Drug Free America Foundation. Now, they're connected with DARE.
Right.
So, Synanon has a common ancestor, or DARE, you know, has a common ancestor, a direct lineage with this Synanon attack therapy, which was, you know, criminal and murderous.
Right. Which also, too, to tie it back to the state, you know, using our definition of a state, it's not necessarily, you know, your government worker, your people there, although they're part of the state or enabled by the state. The state is really the mindset of violence being employed by a minority of the people who have a moral past to commit violent acts and coercion. And I feel like that's pregnant within these kinds of Synanon organizations or the straight organization. It's the idea that violence is okay and abuse is okay as long as we're trying to better you for your own good. As long as the results are the results we're looking for, then violence is perfectly okay.
I'm reading from this site called Orange Papers, orange-papers.org, which started out as a sober guy who'd left AA, who's still sober, debunking AA. I don't agree with everything he says about AA, obviously, because I kind of like the idea of AA. But he has some good research on this site. This is a section called Children's Gulags. And I'll link this. First Lady Nancy Reagan repeatedly praised Straight Incorporated for their wonderful work. But they, too, ended up being just another vicious cult that tortured children in the name of rehabilitating young drug users and who hid the tortured children when Nancy and the news cameras came to visit.
Wow. Yeah, and I've heard about these before. I think some libertarians have done exposés on these so-called children's gulags. I don't know if I've ever heard them put that way. But basically these things that – and sometimes there's court – the court will order kids to attend these sort of rehab programs or these get straight type programs. And so they are in bed with the state. I've heard a lot about how they can abuse children, sometimes taking them overseas. And I mean, I don't know if slave labor is the word, but basically forcing them into things and treating them like they're less than human. And not only is the state involved with things like judges supporting these kinds of things, but also the state is involved for the mentality. The mentality that if your child wants to experiment with substances, then he's some kind of lost cause who must be beaten up into a pulp and remolded into a good little citizen of the state. I think that that mentality is where this all comes from. That's what creates the market for it.
Yep. And there's another thing on here about a rehab camp based on that kind of stuff run by someone named Colonel Chuck Long. And if you scroll down the pictures here, there's one of Chuck Long with George Bush, George W. Bush, and another of him receiving an award from Colin Powell.
Ah, yeah. If those are your friends, then you're a bad guy. I guess you can judge a man by his friends just as easily as you can judge him by his enemies. So,
yeah.
Ugh.
Long claims it was General Colonel Colin Powell who suggested that he go into the children's boot camp business.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So, of course, because the military wants good little brainwashed citizens. So might as well break them like their horses before they get sent to the military. And then the military will have an easier go of it, won't they?
How many deaths is Colin Powell responsible for, would you guess?
Oh, tons.
And how?
Well, I would give him some. I don't know what he was. Well, I guess not during that one. Okay. So if you just start with the Iraq War, which he was instrumental in selling to the American public. You know, the higher estimates for deaths in the Iraq War are around 1 million. And they range to much lower than that, 500,000 and lower. But I would say a conservative estimate would be at least 500,000 deaths.
It's hard to say with war because it's not just people killed by the enemy's bullets. It's people who are starved afterwards or, you know, killed by the warlords that spring up. Or
in my estimation, though, I still count those.
I do, too.
Because I count war as the ultimate state intervention.
But those aren't generally in the official numbers.
Yeah, yeah. Depends on who's compiling the numbers.
Even people who don't die, their lives are ruined. You know, if you're
right.
if you're a refugee whose home has been bombed and you can't go back to your hometown, you know, you're not dead, but you're not counted in the numbers of problems of war.
Yeah, yeah. And again, as good little Austrian economists, we have to go back and count the unseen as well. You know, all the opportunity costs, all the babies that weren't born, as Scott Horton's fond of pointing out, all the babies that weren't born because they were incinerated in the womb or weren't born because the young couple that was trying to create them was incinerated by a bombing. What about the geniuses that could have been born then and could have invented something like flying cars or anything that could have made life better? All the opportunity costs vis-a-vis that, the people that didn't get born, the people that didn't grow up, or the people that could have grown up to be productive members of society but now are so obsessed with vengeance because their whole family was killed.
I think that we can conclude this by saying that state involvement in drug rehab is a bad thing, where state involvement with anything is a bad thing and always makes things worse. And there's a quote on this page about children's gulags from H.L. Mencken that I think is a really good ender here. The urge to save humanity is almost always a false face for the urge to rule it.
Ooh. Yeah, that's excellent. That's excellent. Mencken's responsible for tons of excellent quotes, and I think that I haven't heard that one before, but that is one of my new favorites, I would say, of libertarian quotes in general.
Yeah.
Excellent. So yeah, if you
if you want to save
the world, just put your ideas out there, and if they're truly world saving, they will be picked up regardless. And if you want to save yourself, learn on your own or find somebody close to you that will help you not only voluntarily, but will help you because they truly care for you, not because they want to exploit you.
Worms.
Peace.
Hello, freedom fiends. It's your boy Dean from the U.S. Get the U.S. out my bloodstream. I own me and that includes endorphins. No one won't ask permission and I won't say please. Freedom fans, one fact that I gotta make clear.
The Freedom Fiends podcast is covered by a Creative Commons Attribution Sharealike 3.0 license. Do what you want with it and spread it around. Tell two friends. Make copies. Email it to everyone you know. Go on the site and comment. This is a conversation. Every week, we'll have an exciting new episode where Michael W. Dean and Nima Vadadi weave their own unique take on the way the world works and how to find your place in it. Available from freedomfiends.com. That's freedomfiends.com.
Freedom Fiends is proudly syndicated by Alterati.com and the Liberty Radio Network at LRN.FM.
Subscribe and tell two friends.
And remember, the only power they have is the power you allow them. We're not saying the Freedom Fiends are the one true path to anarchist liberation, but it's a good one. If you want to put your voluntarist money where your mouth is, consider making a donation to the Freedom Fiends. Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the spinning coin on any post. Then make a one-time gift via PayPal or set up a monthly contribution of as little as $3. Giving to the Freedom Fiends helps advance education of horizontal liberation throughout the world. The Freedom Fiends. We work hard, so send us some money.